When someone is hurt in a truck accident, the one question everyone has is, why did this terrible collision happen? To answer that question takes an experienced team of lawyers and experts. Not everyone has this type of experience. At Colombo Law, we are truck injury lawyers. It's what we do every day. When someone is hurt by a truck, Colombo Law is the law firm people call to get answers. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
Welcome to Sports Weekly with Ayaz Memon.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to yet another episode of Sports Weekly with Ayaz Memon. As always, we've got a lot of action to cover, and it starts with a bit of a heartbreak, a bit of disappointment, but also proof that New Zealand are the preeminent world champions of Test match cricket. Hi, Ayaz. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Fantastic. It's been a fantastic Test match, as we know. If I might be permitted a little alliteration, the Test match was a thriller, as it turned out. Not that it was a thriller in the conventional sense that either team could have won. I think by post in the second session on the last day, it was clear after a few wickets fell that New Zealand can't win. But you know, for the match to go on, almost till virtually the last ball of the fifth day's play could have decided the match in India's favor or not, or a draw. As it turned out, it happened to be a draw. So in that sense, it was edge of the seat excitement. New Zealand showing a lot of gumption, a lot of pluck. But I must add here a little sense of disappointment that I had with the New Zealand batting approach. It didn't kind of look like a team which is extremely confident of its main batsmen playing on these tracks against Indian spinners on Indian pitches. And that seemed to be a bit jarring for me, because New Zealand in the last 2 years, 3 years, maybe 4 years, have been a very enterprising team. I mean, they may not have been the most flamboyant. They're not, you know, not so strong on body language like the Aussies, and they don't have much brouhaha surrounding them. But they're a very efficient team, and they're a team which has been capitalizing on opportunities to go out and win matches. That's how they won the World Test Championship against India. You know, for 4 days, it seemed that the match was a seesaw struggle. India had moved ahead. Finally, on the last day, New Zealand, in a fantastic display of batsmanship, they went on to win the test. Here, in the first innings, 151-run opening partnership, you know, which is, yes, I mean, it took a little while, but you expect that because they are chasing, or they were, you know, India had made 345. That was their first objective, to get past that. And they suddenly put the shutters down, and the batting became so dogged and dour and unenterprising that 296 runs in 142 overs is not how teams will win matches on slow turning pitches, which you find in the subcontinent, and certainly not champion teams. And in the second innings also, look at what happened. They lost a wicket on the fourth day, last over or second last over. Started the day well. Night watchman and Tom Latham, who was one of the heroes for New Zealand in this match, saw through till lunch. And then after lunch, as soon as, you know, they lost one wicket, and not Latham, the night watchman,
William Somerville,
they just went into their shell. William Somerville. They just went into their shell, including Williamson. Kane Williamson, who's a great batsman. And because they went into the shell, the Indian captain, Ajinkya Rahane, could attack them with more aggressive fields. You know, he was not bothered because the runs were not coming. Even the singles were not coming. And the pressure kept piling. And then once Williamson got out and Latham got out, you know, the batting just caved in. And it took all the efforts of the tail-enders. And I must mention here, Sachin Ravindranath, who actually played a stellar knock in his debut match. He didn't score too many runs, but he showed great nerves. And, you know, stuck it out till the end, he and Ejaz Patel. I mean, imagine New Zealand being saved by an Ejaz Patel and a Rachin Ravindranath, you know. So that's how globalized cricket has been. And certainly it's showing, it's also reflecting the multiculturalism of New Zealand society, isn't it, Mr. Fantastic? So it's a great, I mean, in the sense, New Zealand have served themselves well, because the last time they were here, they lost 3-0. So they have not lost the first test match. They have a chance to win the second. And if they win a match in India and go from here, boy, that is going to be some achievement.
And, you know, looking at the way their team performed, their fast bowlers did most of the wicket taking in both innings. And Mumbai typically does favor fast bowlers. It's been known to be a dust bowl also, but the first morning will be crucial. So the toss will again be crucial. But just for a moment, staying with this test match, I think One of the biggest highlights for India has to be Shreyas Iyer and the application that he showed, and what a debut it was for him.
It was. I mean, in my opinion, there were many players who did extremely well in this match. You know, Will Young, Tom Latham, Tim Southee, and Kyle Jamieson. I mean, you know, on a pitch which had very little for fast bowlers, these guys picked up 14 out of 17 wickets for New Zealand. With a little help from the spinners, it could have been tighter, the match. But the two outstanding performers, one was a debutant, the other was a veteran. The debutant was Shreyas Iyer, a century and a half century in the same match, and both made in a crisis in both innings, in the first as well as the second innings. I thought, you know, the half century was better than the century because India were 51 for 5. And even if you add the 49 runs lead on the first inning, it was 100 for 5. Had we lost the remaining 5 wickets for another 56 runs, this match was lost. So Shreyas Iyer, along with Ravichandran Ashwin and Akshar Patel, and of course Riddhiman Saha, and this is not the first time that that India's lower order has kind of, you know, pulled the team out of a rut. Remember a couple of times in Australia in the Test matches there, that was a great series in 2020. Then even recently in England, a fantastic partnership between Mohammad Shami and Jasprit Bumrah pulled India out of the woods, and you know, finally led to a win. So it's the top order which has been struggling. We'll talk about that. But just to mention the two heroes, Shreyas Iyer, he's been waiting for a while. He's 26 years old. And he's been waiting for a while to get a place in the team. And now that he's coming, actually, if Virat Kohli was playing, he probably wouldn't have played. You know, and we don't know whether he would have then got a look in the second test. Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. But because he got this chance, he's been waiting for a while. He's been vocal about wanting to get a chance. He came and showed the full extent of his desire and his skills and his ability. And it was fabulous to watch. He's a very enterprising batsman. He's got a vast repertoire of strokes, but he's also got a very strong, tough mind. And he's also bats with a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, he's probably a long-term player at 26. He's probably got a good 7-8 years at least in him, and maybe a few more. Probably a captain for the future. He's kind of being touted as that in other quarters for other formats already.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, captaincy apart. I mean, the captaincy, it can happen. But he's 26. I think right now for him, what he's done successfully is that now you can't keep him out of the test team. So he has to play the next test. And if he does well enough, I mean, even if he doesn't do well enough, I think he's surely on the squad, in the squad to go to South Africa. And that's where he needs to start showing his prowess and doing runs, making runs overseas to become a completely acceptable fixture of the Indian batting.
Interesting point you mentioned that he's now made a spot for himself, but at whose cost? I mean, the two major sort of performances that stuck out, one was Mayank Agarwal, who's just not finding form at the top of the order. Who could possibly replace him? Now, if Virat Kohli is coming back for the second test, which he is as captain, who makes way for him? Shreyas Iyer can't.
No, he certainly not. You know, I mean, but before I come there, and you know, before we get to the because that's a big quandary for the selectors. Who will they leave out if Virat comes in? But let me talk. I mentioned about Shreyas Iyer. The other player who's a veteran, who shone, was Ravichandran Ashwin. He's gone past Harbhajan Singh's, you know, wicket tally. He picked up wickets in both innings. He looked the most impressive of the Indian spinners. And he played handy knocks in both innings. In both innings, his innings, the runs that he made were so crucial. So Ravichandran Ashwin is serving out a reminder every time he walks out in whatever format that, you know, you can't just ignore him. Whether you like him or you dislike him, you can't ignore him. He's become that kind of a player. And obviously, he's a fantastic talent. But to come back to the, you know, the dilemma that the Indian selectors and the Indian team management will have now that Virat Kohli is coming. So this is what I feel. My surmise, Mr. Fantastic. He has to replace somebody in the middle order, which has to be either from Pujara or Rahane now, because you can't drop Shreyas Iyer, certainly. And then you've got the string of all-rounders. So you can't drop any of them. So I think whether it's Rahane or Pujara is one part. The other is keeping in mind that India is going to South Africa next, which is an overseas tour where pitches can be tough and difficult because the ball, you know, they are faster pitches and it requires a little more or lots more experience. I think Dravid and Virat and the selectors might be eager to get more experience in the squad. So they'll give another chance to, in my opinion, to both these guys in Mumbai, in the Bombay test, and replace, say, an opener, Mayank Agarwal with KS Bharat. if Ridhiman Saha is not fit, if he is fit, Ridhiman Saha and Shubman Gill could be the openers. Now, both those positions are also not fixed, you know, because if Pant comes back, then Saha loses his place. And if when Rohit and Rahul come back, obviously, Shubman Gill is not in the running. But if Saha or KS Bharat opens the innings with Mayank or with Shubman Gill, then Virat walks in into the team without dislodging either Rahane or Pujara. That's the best case scenario for these two senior pros, Pujara and Rahane. Or another scenario is that one of them is dropped. Virat Kohli is accommodated. Both these openers are retained. And of course, everything else moves. The worst case scenario for them is that both are dropped. And somebody like a Surya Kumar Yadav is tried out along with Virat, who comes back and takes his place. And therefore, you know, they are building and looking ahead. Okay, guys, okay, you know, last 3 years, you've had a pretty lean trot. So maybe you need to go back and regain your form and then fight your way back into the team. So all these things are possible. But I think most likely it's going to be that, you know, they will be part of the squad. If they're part of the squad, then you play them.
Yeah.
You know,
there's enough experience there. But here's another scenario where Saha sits out and Bharat makes his mark or his entry into the team. Mayank Agarwal is dropped for a trial to Surya Kumar Yadav, even if it's in the opening slot. And the rest of the middle order remains untouched and makes way for Virat Kohli. So that's another possible scenario. But you're right. It's
well, there are countless possibilities, Mr. Fantastic. It could be that Pujara can open along with Mayank or with Shubman. And Pujara has in the past opened. So Virat Kohli comes in. But of course, Virat will have to bat number 3. Or if he still wants to bat at number 4, then he has to send Rahane at 3 or Shreyas Iyer at 3. You know, I mean, so all kinds of possibilities are there. But what the clear message is, and what you and I are both actually, in a sense, running around in circles trying to discuss, is that both Rahane and Pujara are under strict scrutiny. They are under a lot of pressure. And their places are by no means secure. Remember, the unfortunate Hanuma Vihari, you know, that also means that Shreyas Iyer has been lucky. Because had Hanuma Vihari not been forgotten by the selectors and then finally put sent off to Australia with India A, he would have played the test. And, you know, so sometimes life rolls out, doles out some luck. And I think it has helped Shreyas Iyer. But I don't think that Pujara and Rahane can now depend any longer on luck. I think it's not an issue of luck anymore. It has to be about their talent and their performance, and they have to deliver.
Absolutely. I think they've reached the end of the rope in terms of their opportunities. What does Ridhiman Saha's future really look like? I mean, he had an injury. He sat out for the most... he didn't really keep wickets in New Zealand's first innings, but he came back and had a really strong half century in the second innings, which set up the test match for India. So what is his role? Are we going to see him around much longer? Definitely not after Rishabh Pant is back, but even now with Shikhar Bharat, who did a good job in the first innings.
Well, I really think that Mumbai could be his swan song if he's fit enough to play. If his neck is not giving him a problem, then Ridhiman Saha, he's 37. Your first wicket keeper choice is Rishabh Pant. And then you can't have Ridhiman Saha as the second wicket keeper in the team at 38. Then, and Bharat has made such a favorable impression, even as a substitute, then it makes sense to take him as the second wicket keeper to South Africa. So I think that Ridhiman Saha, he's had a pretty unfortunate career when you look at it very transparently, because he's been in and out of the team for sometimes for no fault of his. He's had a long wait before that because Dhoni was playing, and he's been he's excellent technically. He's also very good when it comes to batting. He's not a star, but he's been a very efficient player, as he showed in the second innings here. But I think time's running out for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's had a stop-start career, 39 test matches, average just under 30. He's had a few test centuries as well, but never really got an extended run. And it's like a lot of other athletes who kind of grew up in the Tendulkar era and therefore lost out on chances. He's had to live under the shadow of MS Dhoni for the most part of his career.
Yeah, he has. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, sometimes these stories make, I mean, these careers make such great stories, no, heart-rending stories. And Saha is one of them.
It's a tragedy, almost. Moving on to some other cricketing action, we've had Bangladesh and Pakistan going head on in a test match that has just started. That's just about to finish. Pakistan had a tough time, conceded the lead, but are now on track to win. By the time we release this, they might have just finished off Bangladesh yet again. We're also looking at some other interesting sports from around the world. We've got a look at the Junior World Cup currently taking place in Bhubaneswar, where India has made the quarterfinals. They finished second in their pool with a 2-1 win-loss record, losing only to France. They will now face Belgium in the quarterfinals. But that's not the most interesting part about this tournament. You know, this has probably been one of the highest scoring hockey tournaments I have ever witnessed. Have you ever seen these score lines, Ayaz? 14-0, 12-5, 17-0, 13-1. It's crazy. There are badminton games that have fewer points sometimes.
Well, you know, these score lines are between mismatches. You know, I mean, you have a Germany or Argentina playing Egypt, you'll get that kind of a score line. But you're right. But this is the trend of modern hockey. You know, when I was doing the Olympics television coverage, and we used to sometimes think about, you know, score lines of 5-3, 6-4 between two big teams. And those were unthinkable. Imagine in the early days when I started watching hockey, of course, it was on grass, not on Astro. You know, 2-1, 3-1 would be a rarity. When it became a seven goals mauling that we received in the Asian Games in 1982, all hell broke loose. So the AstroTurf makes the game faster, makes the game more tilted towards scoring more goals because the breakaways happen. The penalty corners have become so specialized. Specialists are chosen only for the penalty corner conversions, etc., etc. So I think that hockey has become, it's a very fast-paced game. It's a very data-driven game. And getting tennis kind of scores is not unusual today. But yes, of course, 12-0 and 13-1 they show a complete mismatch.
Well, more interesting than that is, and we'll have to go through a lot of record books to figure out if this has ever happened. On the 25th of November, 70 goals were scored in 5 matches.
Yeah.
The lowest score on that day was a 7-1 win for France over Poland. I mean, how badly would France have had to play to score only 7 on a day where 70 goals were scored? It's crazy.
It's becoming wild. But it also, look, this is the Junior World Cup. So in a sense, you're also getting an idea of the trend where hockey is going. So you may be right. I mean, there might be a scenario where 10-6, 11-8 would become fairly regular score lines. I'll just draw, it's not an analogy with cricket, but let me just tell you what's happened. And let's not discuss the current test match, the test match which just got over, where the scoring rate was so poor, 1.8 and 2 runs per over. But in modern cricket, in test cricket as we've seen, teams scoring in 90 overs in a day, scoring 330, 340 is, you know, rather common.
Yeah, it's the norm these days. You expect a team to be close to 300 on a day.
While about 40-50 years ago, if you scored 250, you would get, you know, like, you would be applauded off the field. And, you know, everybody would talk of how wonderfully you've done to score 250 runs in a day.
But changing trends, I think hockey anyways has always been a very fast-paced game. And a lot of the rule changes, the rolling substitutions, the lack of offside.
But talking about hockey, I must mention here that India is qualified for the knockouts, but one team which hasn't is Pakistan.
Yes.
And I was reading a report in one of my ex-colleagues, Mihir Vasavla, who's very perceptive about hockey and he meets the right kind of people. And one of the problems that he's highlighted about Pakistan, and I'm saying that in the context of subcontinent hockey, which one time was an ornament to the game, that the Pakistan hockey system is still locked up in the past. The players are not taught to play attacking, aggressive hockey on artificial turf. They are talking about what happened in 1982 World Cup or 68 Olympics or stuff like that and living on past glory. India have made that jump. They moved ahead after spending 3-4 decades lamenting and in the being maudlin about what used to be. They moved ahead. Pakistan haven't, which is why they're going back home. Otherwise, you know, in junior hockey, you would expect Pakistan to be at least qualifying. But why, you know, it's not strange at all when you consider that in the Tokyo Olympics, Pakistan didn't feature at all in hockey.
That's true. And even in fact, given a lot of the other travel-related restrictions, there are a few teams missing in this tournament as well. Nonetheless, India plays Belgium in their quarterfinal. Let's hope we're able to talk about them making a further move up into the knockouts when we catch up next. Starting this week, we've got a special guest who will be joining us every episode. Siju Matthew of the Totally Indian Football Show is joining us, and here she is to give us a roundup of all things ISL. Welcome to the show, Siju.
Hello, everyone. I'm Siju, host of the Totally Indian Football Show. The Indian Super League is in its eighth season, and I'm here to bring you the updates of how it's going so far. The league began with a thumping win for ATK Mohun Bagan, who sit on top of the points table with two wins against Kerala Blasters and their rivals East Bengal. Chennai and FC have had a great start to their season with two wins, while Jamshedpur FC, consider the dark horse, have got a mighty win against FC Goa and a draw against East Bengal. Bengaluru FC, who are in their rebuild mode, have played three games so far, a win, a draw and a loss to their name. While teams like Mumbai City, Odisha, Kerala Blasters and East Bengal have to play a catch-up game to enter the top four, hey, but it's just the start of the season. Surprisingly though, the league favourites FC Goa are yet to win a game. They've played two matches and have lost both. And they sit at the bottom of the points table. There's a lot to do for Juan and his men. Well, that's about it for today. For all things Indian football, follow and subscribe to the Totally Indian Football Show on all major platforms. Until next week, enjoy the ISL.
That was wonderful hearing Siju talk about the ISL. I mean, you know, Mr. Fantastic. I think the sports scenario in India is getting so rich, and apart from the competitive, the flavor of competition that is coming in, it's just that the expanse of sports. So it's, you know, cricket obviously is the huge, most hugely popular sport, but other sports like badminton, football, the ISL, kabaddi, they're all becoming big. Hockey after the achievement at the Tokyo Olympics and so on. So I think it's great to have somebody, you know, we'll have a feature on football every week, which is fantastic.
Absolutely. And continuing with football, we've got Saumil in the fold, and he'll give us a roundup of everything that happened in the Premier League and other European leagues, plus a bit of sad news from the world of Formula One and other roundup. Over to you, Saumil.
Hi, Mr. Fantastic. Thank you so much. So much in the world of football to talk about. And I have a big smile on my face being a Manchester United fan, of course. Not only because of our result, which I shall get to in a second, but also because Manchester United have appointed a brand new interim manager. And it may finally seem that they've taken that one big step towards securing their long-term footballing future. More on that in a second. But let's start with the Premier League roundup. Let's talk about the big fixtures of this weekend and what really happened. And we have to start with Manchester United because we had a big-ticket fixture up against Chelsea. And boy, oh boy, this was some game to look at. In terms of the results front, it might come across as a very evenly squared up game with Chelsea drawing 1-1 against United at home. And it may come across as a very disappointing result for Chelsea because now their lead at the top is only 1 point, with Manchester City just completely breathing down them with 29 points and Liverpool up with 28. But Chelsea, they have slipped up again. And let's be honest, it wasn't half as close as the scoreline suggests. United were nowhere close to being an even equal team all the way through. Chelsea were dominant. They asserted their style. And even with an injured Romelu Lukaku, they still looked like the team to beat in the first half. It actually took Manchester United around 40 minutes to register their first touch within the Chelsea attacking third. And then even a few more minutes to register their first touch within the attacking D. That is some crazy stuff. 24 shots by Chelsea to the three of United, 66% possession, which was way higher in the first half. You could tell this was meant to be Chelsea's game, but then again, an error from Jorginho. An error from him in the second half allowed Jadon Sancho just to get past. Bit of sloppy defending by Jorginho. Sancho went ahead and scored, and eventually Chelsea got a penalty because Thiago Silva got fouled in by Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and so Jorginho converted and actually redeemed his mistake in a way. So Chelsea were able to equalise. But had Rudiger's goal got in the very end of the game, things would have been slightly different. It was a game of inconsistency for Chelsea, where they dominated play, but were not clinical enough in front of goal. Beat with Werner, beat with Ziyech, beat with Hudson-Odoi. That's where they lacked things. Maybe Lukaku, had he been on there, things would have been slightly different. But again, just returning from injury. And Manchester United, well, they were... You couldn't call them spineless. This was certainly a better performance than what we saw a few weeks ago. But this team was designed to stop Chelsea, not to attack. Only 3 shots in the game, Ronaldo was benched in favour of Jadon Sancho so that they could go for a more defensive midfield three of Fred, McTominay and Matic. And eventually that was the deal breaker in a way that sort of defended the match for Man United. Not that they would have drawn had Ronaldo been there. Again, it's a case of what ifs and what could have beens. But having Scott McTominay in there definitely saved some credibility for Man United. But this cannot be dubbed as a good performance. Either way, 1 point apiece, Chelsea get things even tighter at the top. Speaking of the top, speaking of things being really tight, we saw West Ham losing steam. They got beat by Manchester City 2-1, and their run of form seems to be going in a complete drop. This would have been 1-0 for the majority of the game. It actually even was, with Gundogan scoring the first goal. But Fernandinho, he eventually scored a 90th minute second goal, and Lanzini had to equalise right at the very end. A very slow game from the circumstances because it was being played in the snow. And it was intense physicality. They had to play completely according to the circumstances. And City were just better. Man City were just better. Even though their styles really contradict both of City and West Ham, City just had assertive dominance. And West Ham, they just couldn't manufacture enough chances. Which is strange to say because they're a team that is very good on the counter-attack, but just were blunt in front of Manchester City, who are actually regaining steam. And West Ham are losing it. Arsenal won 2-0 against Newcastle. Things are looking good over there. Brentford beat Everton 1-0, so that was a really surprising one. They have been turning a lot of heads so far this year. But Liverpool winning 4-0 against Southampton. Things are good. The Merseyside Express is in full flow. And in the Premier League, seriously, things are heating up. But can it heat up with Manchester United? Who is the new interim manager? Well, Manchester United have just gone in there, Mr. Fantastic, and they've appointed Ralf Rangnick. Now, Ralf is not the biggest name in the world of football, guaranteed. He's no Jurgen Klopp or he's no Thomas Tuchel by the name value. But Rangnick is the manager that influenced both these managers' game plan. He is the one that introduced the famous Gegenpress tactic, and that is something that completely transformed the game of German football. In fact, you might know him from his stint at RB Leipzig. And at Leipzig, believe it or not, he took that club from the fourth division up to second in the Bundesliga in the space of 4 years. 4 years! It's ridiculous how good this guy is. And Rangnick is known to be someone very technical, very keen in terms of football. In fact, he's known to be a football encyclopedia and knows almost everything about every player in all of Europe. He's that much into it. Eventually, United had to poach him away from Lokomotiv Moscow, where he had a consultancy role with the club. But now United have their man. He will be there for 6 months. And the reason why I feel that this is a very astute appointment is the fact that Ralf Rangnick has been appointed as a consultant for Man United for the next 2 years after his stint ends. So there is someone experienced who knows his football, knows how to make the right decisions there with the team for 2 years to guide them in the long-term success, regardless of whoever the manager is. And just one last thing to add on Ralf Rangnick. He is a coach who prefers high intensity, energy, tackling, pressing, all the things that Manchester United are absolutely bottom in the league at. This can be a fundamental change. Keep an eye out on this one. Yeah, Mr. Fantastic, it's a bit of a shame, really, to conclude this episode in this way. But Frank Williams, the legendary founder of Team Williams, has unfortunately passed away at the age of 79. And there has not been one person with a bad word to say about Mr. Williams. Of course, he and the family sold off the team back in 2020, but they had been running it early on since the 1970s. They've won so many world championships. They've produced world championship winning drivers like Nigel Mansell, like Damon Hill, like Alain Prost. They've had so many legends in the team. Alan Jones is another name that comes to mind. Keke Rosberg is another name that comes to mind. Absolute bona fide legends of the world of Formula One. And yes, the team tailed off, but the impact of Frank Williams cannot be understated. In fact, his story is amazing. Frank Williams was such a gritty and a plucky character from what it's portrayed as. He always used to work. In fact, Frank Williams, on the day of his marriage, he was so passionate about Formula One and race cars that just right after marrying, his wife had to have lunch alone because Frank went back to the factory to work on his Formula One car. Amazing stories. And he unfortunately was paralyzed from his bottom down in a road car accident back in 1987 when he was driving a bit too fast, crashed on the public roads and eventually hurt himself. But even then, even though he was on a wheelchair for the rest of his life, always there at the paddock, always attending the races whenever his health could allow, and just directing the team, controlling it, and having such an influence. Let's be honest, he was no revolutionary, he was no innovation guru or something like that, but just the plucky, gritty nature of running a small team with considerably lower resources than anyone else. For so many years, Williams were the team to go to. And that's all because of Frank Williams. What a man, what a legend. And yeah, his impact can't be forgotten. That's all I can say. The Williams family might no longer be in Formula One, but when you have a Mount Rushmore of Formula One team bosses, Frank Williams certainly has to be there. What an absolute legend. And the Williams team will be hoping that when they go to Saudi Arabia, when they go to Jeddah in the coming weekend, they can do something special to honor his memory because he was such an inspiring figure. And in Jeddah, that's the fun part. The first ever Saudi Arabian Grand Prix will be happening this weekend. And realistically, Max Verstappen has a chance to become world champion for the first time this weekend. All he needs to do is to win this race and for Lewis Hamilton to finish lower than sixth. Now, let's be honest. That does not happen. Hamilton in his current trim of car has been so fast. He's been dominating races, taking pole by half a second. You should watch out for this weekend at the Jeddah Grand Prix in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, it might not be the best country in the world for human rights, but the circuit seems fast. Only the second fastest on the entire Formula One calendar, and the excitement is real. Two races to go in the championship, and we will be covering all of this on the Inside Line F1 podcast, also produced by Idea Brew Studios. And I can't wait to tell you more on Sports Weekly. But that's all from the world of Formula One today, Mr. Fantastic. Can't wait seriously to see how this plays out.
Thanks so much, Somil. That was amazing as always. It's a pleasure to have been part of the show again with this growing group of sports enthusiasts and experts. Until next time, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Fantastic. Always a pleasure being on the show with you. And well, we'll wait and see what happens in Mumbai in the second test match, India versus New Zealand.